Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited Q1 FY19 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Jason D'Souza. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you very much. Welcome to Glenmark's Q1 earnings call. Before we begin the call, I would like to introduce the participants from Glenmark. We have with us Glenn Saldanha, the Chairman and Managing Director, Mr. V.S. Mani, Executive Director and Chief Financial Officer. We have Robert Matzik, President of North America and Global API Business, and we have Utkarsh Gandhi, Senior Manager, Investor Relations and Strategy. Before we begin the call, I would like to ask Bob to give an overview on the U.S. business. Over to you, Bob.
Thank you, Jason, and thanks everyone for joining us today. Before I give the quarterly update for the U.S. business, I wanted to mention a couple of updates. First, we recently announced the NDA filing acceptance for Ryaltris, formerly GSP301 nasal spray. This is the first new drug application submitted by Glenmark to the U.S. FDA and another major milestone in the development of our innovative pipeline. Second, our manufacturing facility in Monroe, North Carolina, received its first supplemental abbreviated new drug application from the FDA for etobicoke and carglumic hydrochloride tablets, 250 mg/100 mg and 62.5 mg/25 mg. The Monroe facility is the company's first U.S. manufacturing site, and Glenmark has invested more than $100 million into the facility with plans for future expansion in coming years. The North American finished dosage form business, which includes Canada and the U.S., closed the first quarter with recorded revenues of $105.21 million, or 7,037.48 million rupees, versus last year's corresponding quarter, which was $162.32 million, or 10,405.29 million rupees. We forecast that for the U.S. business, second quarter sales for the financial year will increase sequentially over Q1. In the first quarter of fiscal year 2018-19, Glenmark was granted final approval and launched clobetasol propionate topical solution 0.05%, Pulsivam hydrochloride tablets 625 mg, and tacrolimus ointment 0.1%. The company also filed three ANDA applications with the U.S. FDA this quarter and plans to file an additional three applications in the forthcoming quarter and expects to receive approval on three to five new products in the quarter. Glenmark's marketing portfolio through June 30, 2018, now consists of 137 generic products authorized for distribution in the U.S. market. The company currently has 63 applications pending in various stages of the approval process with the U.S. FDA, of which 30 are Paragraph IV applications. The global API business had a solid quarter. Revenue from the sale of API in regulated and semi-regulated markets globally was rupees 2,100.78 million for the first quarter ending June 30, 2018, against the corresponding quarter from last year of rupees 2,047.70 million, an increase of 2.59%. And with that, I'll turn the call back over to Jason to talk more about the progress we're making on our innovative pipeline.
Thanks, Bob. Just to complete the overview of the remaining business, India, sales from the formulation business in India was at 6,632 million, recording growth of 7.61%. As per IQVIA MAT June 2018, Glenmark is ranked 13th with a market share of 2.31%. Glenmark is the fastest-growing company as per MAT June 2018. The India business market share gained market share in the following segments. The derma segment market share increased from 9.15% to 9.19%. Respiratory market share grew from 4.6% to 4.77%. Cardiac market share increased from 4.04% to 4.35%. Glenmark recently launched Akynzo, oral fixed-dose combination of nilpotent and paltusotine in the Indian market. as a 5-day prophylaxis from both acute and delayed phase of chemotherapy-induced nausea and vomiting. Glenmark had earlier announced an exclusive licensing arrangement with Helsinn Group, a Swiss pharmaceutical group, to introduce Akynzeo with exclusive marketing rights in India and Nepal. Glenmark announced that it has entered into a collaboration agreement with a leading homegrown private equity firm, True North, for its orthopedic and pain management business for the India and Nepal market. Glenmark orthopedic and pain management business, consisting of brands such as Ezos, Bon K2, Colasmart, and Linozolite, clocked revenues of $1,558 million in FY17-18. Under this collaboration, Glenmark's orthopedic and pain management business will be transferred to a new entity to be incorporated by True North, which will market the product portfolio in India and Nepal. The transaction is expected to be completed in the next 2 to 3 months. Glenmark Consumer Care business continued its robust trajectory growth with 25% growth in the first quarter of FY18-19. As per IQVIA data for the first quarter, Glenmark leading brand in the consumer healthcare business, Candid Powder, recorded 5.6% value growth and market share of 46.6%. Likewise, VWash Plus brand continued to be a dominant market leader in the intimate hygiene category with a market share of 46.7% in the first quarter, a gain of 4% market share over the last year and value growth of 21.5%. Moving on to the other businesses, the Africa, Asia and CIS region, for the first quarter, revenue from this region was $2,454 million, recording an increase of 8.37%. As per IQVIA MAT June 2018 data, Glenmark Russia business showed degrowth of 5.5% versus overall market growth of 3.7%. Glenmark Russia continues to dominate the dermatology segment and still ranks among the top 10 in derma companies in Russia. Glenmark is also ranked among the top 5 companies among the companies present in the expectorant market. Further key markets in the CIS region also, like Ukraine and Kazakhstan, record high double-digit secondary sales growth for the company. The Asia region recorded secondary sales growth was led by key subsidiaries such as Malaysia, Philippines and Myanmar. The Africa region also posted strong secondary sales growth of 50% in the first quarter, aided by robust growth in most of the key markets. Europe formulations. Glenmark's Europe operations was at $2,197 million, recording an increase of 35.61%. The Western European business continued expanding, led by strong growth from Nordic countries due to the launch of Salmex in Denmark and Norway. While the UK market growth was impacted due to the one-off supply chain issues, the overall growth was compensated with strong performance in Spain, Germany and the Netherlands. The Central Eastern European region recorded strong secondary sales growth in spite of significant pricing pressure during the quarter. During the fourth quarter, Glenmark had become the first generic company to receive regulatory approval for substitution in Denmark for its generic of Seretide Acuhaler, and the company has subsequently launched the product in Denmark and Norway. Latin America. Glenmark's revenue from Latin America and Caribbean operations was at $976.11 million, recording a growth of 15.50%. The API business. Revenue from the sales globally was at $2,100 million for the quarter ending June 30, 2018. Recording growth of 2.59%. In spite of a challenging external environment, Glenmark recorded robust sales in some of its key APIs such as perindopril, lercanidipine, and aflibercept. On the R&D side, first the respiratory acids. Glenmark announced the filing acceptance of the company's first new drug application for Ryaltris. The PDUFA target action date for completion of FDA review is March 31, 2019. Glenmark also entered into an exclusive licensing arrangement with Seqirus, part of an Australia-based specialty biotechnology company, to commercialize Ryaltris in Australia and New Zealand. Glenmark will receive an upfront payment as well as regulatory and commercial milestones from Seqirus. Ryaltris represents the continued commitment towards building a global branded business in the specialty respiratory segment. The company plans to commercialize Ryaltris in several key markets globally and has already initiated product filings in certain markets. GBR-310, Glenmark recently announced results from a phase 1 study that suggests similarity in pharmacokinetic, pharmacodynamic, safety and immunogenicity profiles between Glenmark's proposed biosimilar GBR-310 and the reference product Omalizumab, marketed in the US under the brand name Xolair. Glenmark expects to meet the US FDA in H2 CY 2018. With the goal of advancing the development of GBR-310. The company targets to file initiate a phase 3 study in Q4 FY19. GRC-39815 and NCE continues to progress well in preclinical development, and the company plans to initiate a phase 1 study in FY20. oncology assets, GBR-1302, a phase 1 first-in-human study to determine MTD in patients with HER2-positive cancers is ongoing. Dose escalation continues at 9 participating clinical sites across Germany and the US. The study is currently enrolling patients in cohort 9 and will continue until MTD is reached. Translational data in trastuzumab-resistant cancers were presented at the 2018 annual meeting of ASCO, and updated results on early biomarker data was accepted for presentation at the European Society of Medical Oncology conference stated in October 2018. The company recently announced an exclusive licensing arrangement with Harbour Biomed for the Greater China Territory to develop, manufacture and commercialize GBR-1302. Under the terms of the agreement, Glenmark will receive an upfront payment and is eligible to receive payments for achieving pre-specified milestones as well as tiered royalties on net sales for any approved product from Harbour Biomed. The agreement potentially worth more than $120 million in addition to royalties for Glenmark. Harbour Biomed will lead the clinical development and commercialization of GBR-1302 with the option to manufacture GBR-1302 for the Greater China market. The companies will collaborate on the generation of clinical data to support the registration of GBR-1302 and HER2 positive indications in their respective territories. GBR-1342, a phase 1 study in human, phase 1 first in human study to determine MTD in patients with multiple myeloma is ongoing. The study is currently enrolling patients in cohort 6 with patients being already identified for enrollment up to cohort 7. Up to 10 cohorts are planned for this MTD portion of the study. The study's primary objective is to assess the safety and tolerability of increasing doses of GBR-1342. Additional study objectives include the assessment of biomarkers, immunogenicity, and measures of anti-tumor activity. At ASCO 2018, Glenmark presented a trial-in-progress poster about GBR-1342 for the treatment of refractory multiple myeloma, including patients who are non-responders to daratumab. GBR-1372 is currently in preclinical development. On GBR-830, a phase 2B study of GBR-830, which is being evaluated for the treatment of moderate to severe atopic dermatitis, has been initiated with 13 active sites in the U.S. Glenmark will be activating sites in Canada and August in the and EU later this year. Glenmark is currently evaluating a GBR-830 for a study in patients with SLE. The company has also initiated preclinical ex vivo translational studies to evaluate GBR-830 in patients suffering from ulcerative colitis. The pain asset, a phase 2B study of GRC-27864, is progressing as per plan with 30 active sites in India and 70 patients recruited for the study. Glenmark plans to complete trial recruitment by end of FY19. Before we move on to the question and answer session, a few notes on the P&L. R&D expenditure for Q1 FY2019 was 245 crores, which was 11.45% of net sales. Inventory as on June 30, 2018 was at 2070 crores as compared to 2030 crores. Receivables as on June 30, 2018 was at 2345 crores as compared to 2332 crores. Payables as on June 30, 2018 was at 1820 crores as compared to 1870 crores. Other income recorded for the quarter was at 138 crores, including 125 crores of forex gain. MTM impacts on loans in USD was to the extent of INR 230 crores on account of the USD INR impact. Gross debt was at 4652 crores as against 4639 crores. Net debt was at 3662 crores for June 30th, 2018 as against 3404 crores. In constant currency, net debt increased by 11 million for the quarter. With this, we would like to open the floor to question and answers.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We take the first question from the line of Neha Manpuria from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my question, sir. If I were to look at the U.S. business, you know, obviously it has eroded quarter on quarter despite the launches. Given we would have a full contribution of these launches in the second half, you know, how should we look at the U.S. business for the quarter and even so for, let's say, over the next 3-4 quarters? What sort of, you know, launches are we expecting?
Yeah, so the, you know, I think we'll see the full impact of the launches such as tacrolimus, Colsabalm, oral tablets, Colsabalm suspension come to fruition in Q2 and moving forward. And then we would expect another couple of launches in the derm or women's healthcare space as well to help help us grow sequentially from this point moving forward.
And would these be, you know, sort of limited competition launches?
Yeah, I think there's a great one.
No, that's right now. I think they'll all be limited competition. They will be either sole or first or second on the market.
And how many launches are we expecting, sir, in the full year, given we have 3 good launches already in the quarter?
Bob, you
want to? Yes, so we would expect at least a couple more that would be limited competition coming up.
Oh, okay. And a second question on the, you know, announcement on orthopedic and the pain management business to True North that we've announced. You know, what is the thought process of, you know, doing such a deal, given I'm assuming Glenmark will still continue to market these products in the market? And should we expect more such sort of, you know, smaller businesses being divested as we go along?
So this is a collaboration that we've signed, right, with True North. So it's basically a partnership where we're trying to enhance the orthopedic franchise, right, and further the growth of the franchise collectively. I mean, the advantage is True North is bringing the capital to the table to basically launch, you know, launch the new products and you know, to enhance the value for both partners. I would not anticipate doing any similar deal going forward, but this is a unique thing, and we're happy to be taking this forward.
Okay, so this is more getting capital to grow the business rather than, you know, we probably don't have enough scale in the business and therefore us divesting the business.
There's no divestiture. It's a collaboration, basically.
Okay, so the sales would still be recorded under Glenmark. How would the accounting work?
I mean, we can't comment on the specifics, Neha. This is as much as we can say right now.
All right, thank you so much.
Thank you. This is a reminder to all the participants in the conference. If you wish to ask a question, you may press star followed by 1 on your touchtone telephone. A reminder to all the participants in the conference, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star, then 1. We would take the next question from the line of Prakash Agarwal from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Just trying to understand this Ryaltris going forward. In terms of commercialization, you've seen some out-licensing for Australia and New Zealand market. How do you think about Europe and US?
So we think, look, Ryaltris for us will be our first global brand as a company, right? And I think, you know, in markets where we don't have a presence, right, we will continue to partner it out. I think Australia and New Zealand was the first, but there are several markets where we don't have a commercial, where we don't have commercial presence, markets like China, Japan, South Korea. So we will find partnerships in these markets too. And in the markets where we have a presence, we'll either commercialize on our own or we will partner out with a local company or, you know, to take this forward.
but you would be 1 year out for this product. So have your preparations, either in terms of partnership or your own launch, is when do we start the expenses going up on this account?
So look, we don't anticipate any expenses going up this year. I mean, that's the only visibility that we can give you at this point. We're still deciding from a commercial perspective what's the best way to take this forward.
Okay, and from a three-year perspective, I mean, last time we discussed that, requested for, a little color on the potential peak sales we can derive from most of the molecules. So if you could give some color on this one and Xolair.
So look, Ryaltris for us, I mean, considering if you take global sales, right, this could be a pretty large opportunity for us, right? I would anticipate, between 150, 200 million peak sales on global sales. Of course, Xolair could be even larger, right? I think, we're not ready to put out numbers on Xolair, but, at this point, we anticipate that so far what we are seeing is we're likely to be among the first biosimilars for Xolair. So that could be a large opportunity for us too.
And would it be fair to think on Xolair also you would have interest from, MNC players in terms of in licensing the same? Or what is, are you looking out already or we are, developing it first and then at later phase 3 we might look at out licensing?
So again, we have active discussions on Xolair for partnering on various markets, but we've strategically not decided what's the best way forward for us, right? Whether we want to partner or we want to move this forward on our own.
Okay. And just lastly, on sharing a little bit maths on the deal that you've done. So looking at your orthopedic portfolio sales, the number isn't too big. If you could just give us some color, because AICD number is really small, about 28, 30 crores. So I don't know what's the number, but what is the expected or what is the max sales for third party number, if you can share AICD or IMS on this business?
So Prakash, that number we've put out in the press release, I think it's close to
next. Yeah, so we put out the net sales of this business.
It's 155 crores, Prakash.
Okay, and the stake that we might be or we are, we are selling.
So we are not giving any further insights into it, Prakash.
Okay, but as the earlier participant asked, in terms of consolidation, would it be more than 50%? So consolidation would not happen and it would be below the line, or just that color would be helpful. Thank you.
Prakash, we can't give any further information on the transaction.
Okay. Okay. Great. Thanks. I'll join later.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is a reminder to all the participants in the conference. If you wish to ask a question, you may press star followed by one on your touchtone telephone. We take the next question from the line of Anubhav Agarwal from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. Just, Glenn, on this question on the India business collaboration, how was this portfolio growing orthopedics for last 1 or 2 years?
So the sales were, were pretty much flat. We didn't, so that's the reason why we think, getting in a partner will help fuel the growth of this franchise.
But again, my understanding is most of the India businesses do not need that much capital, right? In terms of priority of your, let's say, decision making, I was thinking like our OTC portfolio will need much more capital, right, than this orthopedic portfolio. So I'm just trying to understand the decision-making process of conning out the orthopedic portfolio and
Look, India is a very strong business for us, okay, Anubhav. As you know, in the last month, we were the fastest growing company, right? IMS, AICD, all of us are putting us at 22-25% growth. So it's a fast-growing portfolio. It's a very valuable portfolio for us. And we continue to drive growth across all the different lines, okay, that we have in India. So it's, you know, this is one line where we thought we needed a financial partner to help us fuel the growth, so we did it. We did something about it, right? But the rest of the franchise continues to do exceedingly well. We've gained market share across each and every therapeutic segment that we operate in. So whether it's dermatology, whether it's cardiovascular, whether it's respiratory, whether it's metabolic. So it's a very strong franchise for us, right? And we continue to gain traction across. OTC business, as you know, is growing at 25%+. So, I mean, I think one cannot be too ambitious, right, to expect growth beyond that. So I think across the board, India remains a strong franchise for us and continues to be very valuable for the company.
Okay. That's helpful. One question on the U.S. business. Last time you mentioned that, Bob mentioned, I guess, the Velcol and Tacrolimus, you guys already have contracted 15% share. So what was the reason that your contracted share did not materialize in quarter one and now you're guiding for quarter two for that share?
Well, I think, this is Bob, I think the, you know, these were kind of mid-quarter and, you know, the basically sales were just starting to ramp up and share was starting to ramp up, but now we're seeing that share be more mature and, you know, we can expect a steady run rate going forward.
So, Bob, IMS shows that your share, for example, in some of these drugs is, was low single digit to mid single digit versus you guiding for 15% plus. So have you reached that 15% number now already when we are in August?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in terms of the channel, we've reached that. I think we just need to get there in terms of, like, you know, net prescriptions. But we're 25% plus, you know, from a channel perspective at this point on these products.
So 25% is basically you get 25% of the prescriptions you're getting on both the products right now, Velcol and Tacrolimus?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of what our contracted share is, you know, the
Anubhav,
probably needs to ramp up a bit.
So Anubhav, that's the share we have, okay? Obviously, you know, there will be some inventory in the channel, so it may not completely reflect in IMS on the first day, right? And it's hard to predict what IMS is going to report, right? But the share we have is in excess of 25% on these products.
Understood. No, I was understanding from the perspective that the sales reported were lower than expected and looked like the contribution from these two products did not reflect in this quarter sales. That's why I was reflecting
right.
That.
Yeah, absolutely. There was no reflection in Q1 because obviously there's inventory in the channel, right? So even if we get the share, right, it's not a day one launch, Anubhav, right? You're coming in a market where there were already one or two players who had launched ahead of us, right? So by the time, you know, that there is inventory in the channel which has to get washed off, right, before our product goes into the market. And even after that, you know, it's a gradual ramp up, okay? But as on today, as Bob said, right, we've already locked in share which is 25%+, right, across the three products.
Okay, that's helpful. If I can ask one clarity or one question on the gross margin, last time Mani mentioned that the INR sensitivity for you guys is 1 INR depreciation, 1 rupee INR depreciation is 30 crore kind of benefit. So INR sequentially went from 64.5 to 67, that's 2.5 rupee almost. But in gross margin, I don't see that benefit of 65 crore have flown through this quarter. Mani, what has led to that benefit not realizing?
So partly if you see the most of the benefit would be there in the exchange rate difference, okay? Obviously as the INR moves up, whatever we kind of sell, the export debtors or whatever, they get reevaluated. So that's partly sitting in the exchange rate difference.
No, but that's sitting, see, you're recording sales also at 67, right? So gross margin should reflect that benefit, isn't it?
Yeah, to some extent it is already there. No, if you look at it in the previous quarters, it was about 37% in the third quarter, and so now if you look at it this year, it's about 35. So already we've recorded about 1.5 to 2%.
35%.
Yeah.
Material costs.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So, but you know, somehow my number suggests that for 4Q also we were about 34.5. So I'm not. So actually, gross margin for us has declined sequentially.
No, if you look at it compared to third quarter, partly fourth quarter and this quarter, it's been somewhat better, okay? It's been at least 1.5-2% higher. That's the number.
Okay, sure. I'll recheck and join. Thank you.
Thank you. This is a reminder to all the participants in the conference. If you wish to ask a question, you may press star, then one. A reminder to the participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star followed by one on your touchtone telephone. This is a reminder to all the participants in the conference. If you wish to ask a question, you may press star, then one.
Yeah, we're back on.
Yeah, can we take the next question, please?
Sure. We would take the next question from the line of Nitin Agarwal from IDFC Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Glenn, on the the other transaction that you guys mentioned about hiving off the API business into the subsidiary, what are the thought process behind this this move in terms of how do we see this thing going forward?
So I think, we've subsidized our API business, right? And, we're just determining what the next steps are. There is a possibility at some point we may consider bringing in a minority investor in there. And again, the idea is to continue to grow that business, fuel that business, and, whatever cash comes in will go to paring down debt. I mean, that's the thought process.
Okay, thanks. And secondly, on the innovation pipeline, barring with Ryaltris and Xolair, in terms of whatever developments are going to happen there, how should we look at the milestones in the innovation pipeline over say next 12 to 18 months, and what are the things that we should be watching out for from a data perspective and and maybe triggers from a licensing if there are any for the rest of the portfolio?
I think clearly licensing will continue. You will continue to see licensing deals going forward, both at the regional level as well as potential global licensing deals, right? And that continues to remain a priority on the innovation side. I would say in more than licensing, partnership deals, right? Our thought process is we want to continue to stay involved in developing these assets on the innovation side. So we're looking for partnerships here, right? As regards data, I think the oncology portfolio, both 1302, 1342, we keep presenting at various conferences. We have a presentation now at ESMO in Europe, and you will continue to see data continuously being presented at various forums. So the pipeline continues to progress well. The assets are all very valuable. As you know, GBR 830, we are right now in a phase 2B trial, so we don't anticipate data till towards the end of next calendar year. So we still have time. We're planning to start the SLE lupus trial in 8:30. And the oncology assets are doing well for us.
And currently, for R&D spends, what proportion of R&D spends, how is splitting the between generics and specialty right now or innovation?
I think, generics and specialty put together is roughly around 8%, I would say. Innovation is about 4-4.5%.
And between specialty and generics?
We can't break that down for you, Nitin.
Okay, fine. Okay, thank you. Best of luck.
Thank you. I would like to remind participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star, then one. We would take the next question from the line of Saion Mukherjee from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Neil, can you throw some light on Seretide MDI? How is that doing? And, you know, the kind of traction you're seeing. Do we have a good number this quarter from there? And are these like tender markets? How should we think about this ramping up through this year and next?
So the European launch of the Seretide, it's a DPI. So Seretide DPI, right?
Yeah, DPI,
So I think, you know, we are really excited about this product. We've launched in the Nordics. We are expecting approval in Germany anytime. We are expecting, you know, to take this product across the 12, 13 markets. So the ramp-up has been good. And, you know, we see this product contributing significantly to the European growth. It already has started and it will continue to ramp up, right, across the different markets in Europe.
So these are our tender markets? I mean, how do you get share in the markets we have launched so far?
So far it's substitutable. So it's all on substitution, right? I mean, obviously, Germany, you know, you have the AOK tender, which is already concluded for this year. So, but I think going forward, you know, the AOK also could be a interesting opportunity. So I think overall, you know, we feel pretty good about the product and it's doing really well across the markets where we're launching so far.
Okay. And my second question is on Xolair. Have you interacted, has there been any feedback from FDA already on the way to develop this product? Because, you know, you've done a phase one already. And, you know, just wondering what's the level of regulatory uncertainty given that each product is quite unique.
So we've done a meeting with the FDA prior to, you know, completing the phase one, right? We've done a face-to-face with the FDA and we've shared with them our development plan. So I think, you know, there is a lot of clarity on the development pathway, right, and what the expectations are. However, I think post-phase one, we will go back to the FDA with our end-of-phase-two meeting. And present to them again our phase three plan and get consensus around the way forward.
And Glenn, just one lastly, you know, what's the timeline like? When do you expect the phase three to start? When will it end? And when can potentially this product be filed for the US?
So we've already said the phase three we anticipate to start in Q4 of this year, right? You know, it'll probably take us, again, I'm close to 2 years to complete that trial and to complete the phase three and file it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. This is a reminder to the participants. If you wish to ask a question, you may press star then one. Next question is from the line of Chandramouli from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my question. The first question is on the cost rationalization program that you've embarked upon a few quarters back. If you could just give us some color on updates there and how things look for the back half of this year.
Hi, Chandramouli. So in terms of the cost rationalization, that the entire those initiatives continue, and as you can see that it is reflected in the other expenditure being lower in the first quarter. However, as we said that, you know, as the business ramps up, that and other expenditure, especially some marketing expenditure, will increase. So overall, I think the initiative will definitely generate a lot of savings for us, and you will see that in the numbers, in the entire annual numbers for FY19.
The second question is on potential opportunities from pure exits on certain products in the US. There's been a lot of print and in the news around leaders in the US generic market trying to pull out of products which are not making sense for them from a P&L perspective anymore. As the Indian manufacturers, are you seeing any uptake there, any opportunities there, any new business opportunities open up for you?
Chandramouli, could you speak a little louder, please?
Sure. So the question is on exit of generic market leaders in the US, Teva, Sandoz,
yeah.
And talked about rationalizing their portfolio in the US. Are you seeing any opportunities from some of these base business products
I mean, we are constantly picking up business in the US, you know, from some of the other companies that are exiting products. So I think there are those opportunities, right? You know, we're constantly picking up business from these situations.
All right. And can you just give us any update on pricing that you're seeing? What level of base business erosion you're seeing in the U.S.? Because I think recent trends kind of point to stabilization in the pricing situation in the U.S. You know, high single digit, low double digit erosion trends. What level are you seeing?
Yeah, you know, we're continuing to see price erosion. I think it's at this point it's stabilizing. So we are seeing some moderation in terms of the price erosion, but it's still there.
And could you just help us with some ballpark quantification? Is it still in the double digits, or are you seeing it improve into single digits?
It's moderating. You know, I would say it's somewhat, like I said, it's still there. I mean, we're not going to get specific guidance in terms of a number, though.
Sure. Thank you, Norris. And last question is on the regulatory status. So I think you've received some observations at a couple of your plants over the last 4 or 5 months. If you could just give us an update on that.
So far, I think on the regulatory side, I mean, we remain compliant on all our facilities. You know, I don't think we have anything outstanding from the agency.
All right. Thank you very much and all the best.
Thank you. This is a reminder to the participants. If you wish to ask a question, you may press star, then one. We will take the next question from the line of Bharat Shettigar from Standard Chartered Bank. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the call. First question is, your other income for this quarter was 138 crores, which is higher than what you reported for full year FY18. Can you throw some light on what does this include?
So the other income is mainly consisting of the exchange rate difference. Okay, that's about 125 crores.
Okay.
Yeah.
And given what's happened to INR-USD, has the company changed its hedging policy on foreign currency debt in the last few months?
No, yeah. Broadly, we continue to remain the same way. Yeah. So we have a natural hedge in terms of basically the debt and as well as what we export during the year. So to that extent, there is a decent amount of hedge there.
Okay. And the final question is on the True North transaction. The press release mentions a valuation of 635 crores. Can you throw some light on what does this mean in terms of any potential cash inflow for Glenmark?
This is a combination of cash and stock, right? I mean, that's the only visibility we can give.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. This is a reminder to the participants. If you wish to ask a question, you may press star, then one. Participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star followed by one on your touchtone telephone. We will take the next question from the line of Damayanti Kerai from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity. So can you talk about your progress in some non-US, non-India market like Russia and Brazil in terms of how should we look at those markets and what are the challenges you are facing in those markets?
Well, I think the most of the emerging markets, right, see, Asia is doing well for us, Africa is doing well for us, Russia, we're seeing some slowdown in terms of the overall market, you know, but Russia is so dependent on the winter that, you know, if they have a good winter, automatically, you know, we anticipate sales will come back very strongly. So as far as Latin America goes, most of the Latin American countries are doing well. Brazil, we still see challenges in terms of new product approvals, but now Brazil's contribution to the total revenues has come down substantially. So we don't anticipate any impact to the overall performance for the company.
Okay. So broadly, how much it's taking to get a new approval in Brazil on an average? Still like about 2 to 3 years, or what kind of time frame is there for new product approvals?
I think that's more or less correct. I think it's taking about 2 to 3 years.
Okay. And in Russia, recently, have you seen any like changes from the channel procurement side in terms of like there has been some change the way the channels will stock up products, or like any observation from your side?
So we are not seeing any changes from a procurement perspective. So I think the overall market, there is a slowdown. But other than that, I think Russia still remains a very attractive market. And, you know, we have some excellent new product launches. We launched one or two products, you know, in the last 3-4 months. So I think you should see growth coming back very strongly in Russia.
Okay. And can you repeat receivable number for the quarter? I missed on that.
Yeah, it was 2332 crores. 2345, sorry. For June 30th, it was 2345 crores.
Okay, thank you. That's all from my side.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Aditya Khemka from DSP BlackRock. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. Glenn, this China inflation in key starting materials, raw materials for products, how has that impacted our gross margins this quarter? And would you say the entire impact is reflected in this quarter, or would you expect more going forward?
Yeah. So, Aditya, this is Mani here. So, obviously, there is some increase in the China material, but it's a question of two ways. One, obviously, the impact has not been much because, one, of course, some benefit of the rupee appreciation as well. But more importantly, if you look at it all depends on the product mix, okay? So going forward, when you look at the margin, if you look at it, the combination of the product mix and maybe to some extent, obviously, the China impact to limited extent may be there, but obviously the product mix plays a bigger role in that.
Right. So would you, Manisha, from this point onwards, after the first quarter, going into the second quarter, there will be two effects on your gross margin. One will be obviously your product mix is improving, more complex products in the U.S. But to counter that, you would have some Chinese inflation in the raw material also happening, right? So net-net on the impact of both these two, how do you see directionally positive despite the inflationary impact? Or
directionally, we see it as positive. I think directionally we definitely see it as positive because of the kind of good product launches and the mix that we see going forward.
Right. And are we trying to mitigate this risk from the Chinese exposure? Because from what I am reading on the Chinese side, it seems that this problem may persist for the next few quarters to come, maybe even a couple of years. So is there any way really to mitigate this, or do we have to necessarily depend on these guys for sourcing our raw material?
So I think, Aditya, we are anyway doing a lot of different things to mitigate the risk, right? So we don't, so that we don't end up in short supply and shortages and stuff like that, right? But there are clearly challenges that I think the entire industry is facing, right, with regards to shortages from China. So we've done a good job to make sure that, you know, sales don't get affected and materials are available, right, both for our captive as well as our external API sales. And I don't anticipate any impact because of all the mitigation things that we have done. Mm-hmm. But I think the industry continues to be challenged with the whole China situation. Also, there's no doing away with purchases from China. So there will always be some amount of materials which you'll have to depend on China and have to purchase from China over the long run.
Right. And Glenn, just in terms of the capital allocation from this point onwards, you know, despite reporting EBITDA and despite our capital allocation to the U.S. facility, $100-odd million, first let's talk about the U.S. facility and then I'll move forward to the other capital allocation decisions. So the U.S. facility, which costed us about $100 million, this is the first product that we have launched from there, right, methadone?
Yeah.
So by when do you? Yes. So by when do you see a 100% capacity utilization of the plant? A. B. What is the current operating expenses of the plant that is on our P&L, or are we capitalizing it on our balance sheet?
So we are expensing everything out, okay, Aditya. We are not capitalizing anything. But as far as the products, right? I mean, we have maybe about we've already filed a few products. We have some more filings going out this year. So I think all in all, from next year onwards, right, the facility should be I would anticipate towards the second half of next year, all the three lines, which is your injectables, your oral solids, and your nebulizers, right, should be fully operative, right? As regards 100% capacity utilization, it will still take us at least 3 years more, right, from today, right, to get to 100% capacity utilization.
Right. So, in other words, Glenn, so when would be break-even on the facility, at least on the operating expenditure side?
I think from FY21, I would clearly assume that the facility will be break-even.
FY21. So it will still take us roughly like 2 years to break even on the plant.
Correct. Just because we have three lines, right? I mean, so the oral solids we will break even probably this year itself, right, or next year. But we still have an injectable line and a nebulizer line, right, where we are still filing products, right, which have to get approved. And until they get approved and commercialized, right, I mean, you won't achieve break even on the lines.
Fair enough. And again, on this facility only, Glenn, the injectable and the nebulizer line that we have put up, firstly on the injectable side, so we are seeing a lot of people talk about injectable filings in the US. Many examples are there. And a lot of them have filed like a lock, stock and barrel, a lot of ANDAs on the injectable side, especially on the general injectable side. So how do you plan to differentiate your product offering in the US on that side?
So, I mean, I can't give you the details, Aditya, right? I mean, obviously, we have a host of filings. Many of them are first wave of launches. Some are sole FTFs. So, it's a complete mix of products, right, which I don't think we can talk about at this point. But we have clear differentiation in what we're doing.
Okay. How many ANDAs on the nebulizer and the injectable side are pending approval as of now from that facility? Pending approval, filed with the FDA.
I can't give you that number.
Okay. How many do we plan to file over the next 2 years?
I mean, I think that clearly, I would say you'll have at least 15 filings going out between this year and next year out of that facility.
Fair enough. And secondly, Glenn, on the capital allocation side, so, you know, a subsidiarization or a JV formation with the India orthopedic business to refuel growth in that segment. That seems like a good capital allocation decision because you're at least putting money back into a business where we see material growth. But, you know, when it comes to the innovation side, again, we have seen very, you know, small green shoots as of now, and a lot of money is already getting burnt into that R&D engine. Any other plans other than, you know, these out-licensing deals, which obviously are long-tenure deals, any other plan to unlock value there or sort of, you know, make some more money there?
No, Aditya.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. This is a reminder to the participants. If you wish to ask a question, you may press star, then one. We will take the next question from the line of Nitin Agarwal from IDFC Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question again. Money on the... On the other expenses, how should we look at other expenses now going forward? I mean, there's been obviously a pretty sharp drop QOQ, partly driven by R&D. Now, when we look through the year, how should we model that?
So, Nitin, there are two ways to look at it. Obviously, as Jason earlier explained, there is a key in terms of, you know, we're working on the cost reduction programs. So, that's having some benefit. But more importantly, obviously, as the year ramps up, we do see some increase in this other expenses because, you know, as we go through the year and as we start increasing our marketing spends, you will definitely see some increase in this.
Okay. Thanks and best of luck.
Thank you. We will take the next question
from the line of Prashant Nair from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good morning. Can you give a sense of where you expect your net debt to be by the end of this fiscal?
So, Prashant, obviously the stated objective is that we would work towards reducing it from the, as the year goes by. We can't put a number to it, but definitely the business will be cash accretive like last year, and we'll definitely look towards reducing it, okay, on a cash flow basis.
Okay, and can you just share your outlook for this year's CapEx and effective tax rate?
The effective tax rate will be somewhere little high, I mean about 27, a little higher than that. And as far as the CapEx goes,
the CapEx goes, as we said, discussed, Prashant, it remains between 800 and 900 crores, both tangible and intangible.
Okay, thanks a lot. That's it for me.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Harit Ahmed from Spark Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking my question. I'm just looking at your Latin American business. You ended FY18 at around 400 crores of revenues from that geography. And we've seen some volatility in that business over the years. So where do you see this business from a growth and a margin perspective in the next 3 years? We've seen some of your peers also facing challenges in terms of scaling up their businesses in this geography. So will this business be a potential candidate for a divestiture or for a for bringing in a partner?
So I think Latin America for us continues to grow at 15-20%, right, on a constant currency basis across the different markets where we operate. And we think over the next 3 years you should see that kind of growth. I think as regards your question for a potential, bringing in a partner, I don't think right now there's any consideration towards that. So we plan to grow this organically right now.
All right. Okay, and this CapEx figure of 800 to 900 crores for FY19, can you provide some sense of where this spending is being done?
This includes everything. So we have a number of plants in India. There is a maintenance capex. There are some, brands that we will in-license in from Europe and US, as well as there is some capex that will go towards the US plant.
Okay. And I missed the R&D figure for the quarter. Can you just repeat that, please?
245 crores.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. We would take the next question from the line of Pavitra Sudhendram from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the call. Can you share with us cash flow numbers for the quarter, the operating cash flow, working capital, cash interest, cash flow, and CapEx?
Yep. So I give you a kind of a broad guidance on the EBITDA to cash. So we had EBITDA of about 347 crores. The cash, interest was about 55 crores. The cash tax was about 101. And then the working capital increases have been about 103 crores. We have asset additions of about 190, both tangible and intangible. And there is a Texas payment of about 10 crores. So broadly, there's about a 70-80 crore cash, which have basically for working capital and for the next couple of months that's coming.
Got it. Thank you so much. And one other question is regarding the licensing agreement that you signed for GPR 1302. How much upfront cash do you expect to realize from this and also by when? If you can share that.
So we anticipate we'll end up with a high single-digit million-dollar number in this quarter from the licensing of 1302.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Jason D'Souza for his closing comments.
Thanks, Dennis. Just before we close the call, the disclaimer. Information statement analysis made during this call describing company's objectives, projection and estimates are forward-looking statements and progressive within the meaning of applicable security laws and regulation. The analysis contained herein is based on numerous assumptions Actual results may vary from those expressed or implied depending upon economic conditions, government policies and other incidental factors. No representation or warranty either expressed or implied is provided in relation to this presentation. This presentation should not be regarded by its recipients as a substitute for the exercise of their own judgment. With this, we end Glenmark's Q1 earnings call. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited, we conclude today's conference. Thank you all for joining us. You may disconnect your lines now. Thank you.